Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life broadcast for Wednesday, January 21st. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. As always, I'm very glad to be here.
So glad to have you with me tonight and so glad to see our live listeners in the chat. And also want to throw a shout out to those that catch up with us from the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to start tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. 1 planet, 1 race, 1 ancestry, 1 destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And finally, 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, Dr. Vicki, I think we were talking about what we're going to be getting into tonight. We're going to be going over, and I think you had a great idea, and we had talked about touching on the newsletter, the article.
Well, you know,
it's
timely. You know, Dr. Kelly sent out the newsletter yesterday, and for those of you who've read it, it's going to be a little redundant, but it's worth going over, especially these days. You know, really, diversity. It's all about diversity. So I'm going to read some of this newsletter to you, as Dr. Kelly has written it, and then we're just kind of going to talk about it, Michael. You know, history is filled to the brim with examples of human inhumanity. That's true. Racism, bigotry, slavery, general intolerance, you know, has cast a hideous blemish on humanity that continues right to the present. You know, groups exist that have been formed around one central theme. Hate everyone that's not like us. And as Dr. Kelly writes, we can see evidence of this even in the U.S. currently, with families being rounded up and deported. These groups include any organizations and political parties that preach hate and intolerance, as well as any culture that denigrates women simply for not, like for simply for being female, and which includes many religious theologies. You know, groups like this do not recognize that by hating those not like them, they actually indict themselves as betrayers of the human race. Oh, that's profound, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So, as Dr. Kelly continues, it's an objective fact of science that everything in our universe was formed from clouds of interstellar dust in what were called stellar nurseries. In addition to every element known to science, this includes every person of every color or gender who's ever existed or will ever exist. We are quite literally made of the stuff of stars. This being the case, no human being is inferior or superior to any other human being. You're all indeed star material. How primitive and unenlightened it is to consider another person inferior simply due to his or her beliefs, gender, sexual orientation, when we are all made of the same star material. If we're all made of the same stuff, then there's no such thing as different races among humanity. We are one race from one place with one destiny, and this is indisputable. Unfortunately, much of religion bears culpability for teaching that certain races, gays, lesbians, female gender, are cursed by God and therefore inferior. Boy, that's a patriarchal makeup. Such concepts are contemptible to any informed or enlightened person. History nearly breaks under the burden of blood guilt, to use a common religious term, from this source. However, the diversity among humanity is not an evolutionary mistake. It's an evolutionary constant. We see great diversity among most species on this planet. Diversity is literally in our genes. And to deny this diversity by hating those who are not like us is nothing more than pointing to a big fat finger at our own inherent origin. To hate others means to hate oneself, and to hate oneself is an act of self-betrayal. If one betrays oneself, he or she also betrays humanity. You know, I'm going to stop there for Michael before I go on any further because, you know, I had a couple of lady friends over last night, snacks and wine, and we were talking about that basic key element of humanity. Because when you come from your humanity first, you know, mm-hmm. you naturally care for others. And it doesn't matter who they are. You know, you step up. Like, it's, and there was a whole reason we were talking about it. But, and actually it came out by one line of, you know, knowing somebody who seems to be rather standoffish or, you know, a little bit cold, maybe in demeanor, but really have a soft side. And I, as the discussion went, I said, no, they are soft. They're just, those are their, perhaps their observations, they're observing, they're self-certain, you know, maybe there's reasons that they're just not entering dialogue with people, and people misread that. Because this is somebody who would step up to help anybody. So it's not a matter of, oh, she has a soft side. She is, in her humanity, caring for everyone, but she's selective. You know, it, and that's how I think if we kind of rearrange our wording, our language, our perception, then we don't read all this other garbage into our dynamic with each other, even mm-hmm. if it's as simple as a psychological profile. So when it comes to, I don't know, like, you know, when somebody says they're dating and they have a type, what they look like, well, that diminishes even opportunity to meet people who aren't necessarily in your view. You know, it's about one's spirit, it's about one's nature, their personality, and not so much about what they look like as it is about how they behave. And so if we get past this, what things appear, because we've all been conditioned by what we think is a good appearance, you know, or that's more like what we want, because that's how we've been trained. And that's all it is. It's a training ground. And breaking free from that is, well, that's the ultimate thing. And unfortunately, there's just so much of it right now. You know, that, you know, it's a them and us kind of attitude going on. And all it does is create more of the same. And if, for instance, if white people don't step up to help black and brown people, it, like, that's on us as white people, then we're going to continue this division to say, well, that's not my problem. No, we are the problem. And so it's up to us to teach other people, white people, that that's unacceptable. So even as metaphysicians, you know, it's not just about, you know, nice, like, oh, studying the paranormal and UFOs and, you know, psychic phenomenon. It's about our humanity. So we have to step up for each other. I know that's a lecture, Michael. I didn't mean for it to be. But it's such a critical thing to talk about these days.
Absolutely.
Okay, you can speak now.
Oh, I have been speaking. I've been listening to you, and I've been also yelling at my cat to stop meowing so I can turn the mic back on eventually. Hey, I think it worked. No, you're absolutely right. And it's an unfortunate part of the human animal that is tribal and has these inherent bias and othering and things like that. And it's our humanity that will allow us to overcome it because, you know, again, nature is beautiful. That's not disputed. But nature is also brutal. And that aspect of us is probably part of us that's closer to nature. It's our humanity in the sense of our awareness, of our ability to transcend the programming we call instinct and that programming of tribalism that has pervaded humanity for thousands of years, and it is something that we can and will grow beyond. It's just, it's the macro version of, you know, do what you should do now or suffer longer and do what you should do later, you know? Because eventually humanity will need to move beyond such primitive tribalism and, you know, this power structure, but to truly transcend to the next level of awareness as a species. And I want it to happen sooner. I want it to happen now. It's something, you know, it's something that we're seeing in real time. But again, you know, 100 years to us is a lifetime. But in the cosmic span of our time of our species is nothing. We are rapidly changing. And that is why we're seeing so much kickback as well. We are seeing suffering. And we need to address it in the here and now. But
which I think is really different than adapting to a culture. And I think we have to make that distinction. If
how do you mean?
It's one thing. Okay, let's, for instance, and again, I know this is how this might sound. I'm just saying, in our culture, it doesn't matter what religion you are. We don't allow a husband to kill their wives because they looked at a man. You see?
Okay.
And that's a cultural thing. There are some cultures that if, you know, your daughter isn't pure, she's ostracized from the family or eliminated. And it does happen.
It does. And again, one of those things that it does, and it happened a lot in the past too. You know, I think there's this one thing in, I know this isn't really our topic tonight. One thing I always push back against is this notion of, you know, modern corruption or this, you know, this modern thing that's so different than what humanity has always been through, which it's just not. But I mean, it's in fact, in many ways, better in terms of the amount of integration that we have globally. The fact that we're going in the right direction, but it's not a steady trajectory. Sometimes it is one step, you know, two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. And the step backs are, you know, it's not easy and it's painful and people die. And I wish that humanity was different. And it will be.
I know.
It will be. But it also doesn't just happen.
It's
the
effort.
Arc of history doesn't bend towards justice all on its own. It does require participation. It requires growth. And if, you know, when you can link into that empathy, which again, there are parts of being the human animal that I hate. I hate the tribalism. I hate the bias. I hate the stereotyping. I hate the othering. I hate all of that. One thing I love and is not uniquely human, but is very high in humans, is empathy. Empathy is something that is a part of the human animal as an instinct, as part of our core programming, as part of who we are. And it informs our awareness, it informs our consciousness, consciousness, mm-hmm. Our consciousness. It informs, you know, a lot of times when you talk with traditional dogmatic religious people, they will say, well, if there is no God, what is the foundation of morality? How can you say what is right and wrong without God? Which is a silly question, because how can you say what's right and wrong with God? Because God says, why does that make it right? Something, the foundational element to morality, to ethics, is empathy. Empathy is, if we can all agree on the importance of empathy, on the importance of, you know, of honoring that value, everything else is laid out after it. Because that is the source of all morality. And I would say that human beings are not just taught empathy. We are born with it. They have done psychological studies where with infants and children younger than a year old, where they show that they, you know, they empathize with one another. They feel bad when something happens to somebody else around them. They want fairness. In fact, it is the conditioning of society after birth that sometimes takes away from that inherent goodness and morality, you know? That empathy, you know, it's always a rationalization, right? The fact that something has to be rationalized at all, that you have to say, well, obviously this is a horrible thing, but we have to do it because of this. The very fact that you have to say, you have to find some rationale to overcome our human decency is evidence that human decency is there to begin with. And if we can tap into that, and we can convince other people of our arguments and show them the light through empathy, through understanding that we're all human beings, we're all the same species, you know, it is how we can continue to bend the arc of history towards justice.
Well, I think we can take a big lesson from kids.
Yeah.
Kids, children don't know differences like that. And, you know, okay, a story comes to mind, bear with me. My niece, who had come for a visit, she's 9 years old, comes for a visit. She had a few days off at school. We did not where we lived. So she came for a few days. So I sent her to school with my kids. And she came home one day. She was really upset, and she looked at my daughter and said, "You didn't tell me you were black." Because she learned it at school. Because it didn't occur to her to see her cousin, my daughter, as a black child. It didn't occur to her. And it taught me something in that moment, that they don't see that in the dynamic, in the exchange. They don't gauge it that way. And until they start getting into the adult world, mm-hmm. and, you know, adults poison the kids. The amount of bigotry and prejudice we experienced is endless. The harshest one for me to educate my daughter about, and this is in Canada, Michael, mm-hmm. she's outside playing with her friend. And at that time, we had community-based police officers doing the beats and stuff. And one of the kids wrote on the yield sign in felt pen, her name is a N-word. I'm not going to say it out loud. And it upset her. She's just this kid. She's in grade 3 or 4. And right then, a police officer comes by, and she points that out to him and says, "Look what they wrote up there." And he read the sign. He says, "Well, you are, aren't you?" And walked away. She comes home, tells me about this, and I had to educate her about not trusting all police, because they're people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always your friend. And that's really heart-wrenching, to do it in a good way where they don't get angry, to do it in a way of her having a greater understanding of the adult world than the adults do of the child's world. And that's heart-wrenching when you're a parent.
Mm-hmm.
When I look around and see how people are treating each other based on based on simply skin color or an accent, kind of sense. Dr. Kelly has this saying, "Sends me where you can't get a postcard." I love that saying. And part of me wants to get really angry.
Yep.
And the other part of me says, again, sense, feel, think, and do. Process this out. What is the best way to impact for proactive change?
Right.
And it's not to eliminate rather than coexist. So if we can educate and coexist, you know, with others. Now, there's some who will not change their mind. Then I just, I don't dialogue. I've had to in my years. I've worked with a lot of mixed race families, other race families, and educating them not to be angry because it doesn't do any good. It fuels the fire. And so
and
walk away. There's a time to stand up for yourself, a time to address something, hopefully, you know, in some kind of way where you're educating. But anger, that's the worst thing you can do, you know? It's just tough. So I say take a lesson from these kids.
Yeah, 100%. There's a lot to talk about there. I mean, I 100% agree. You know, you're talking about... you said people don't know how to make distinctions. Kids don't know how to make distinctions that way. And you're very right. And I can't help but also think to the fact that, you know, Lord of the Flies style, right? I can tell you that kids very quickly do make distinctions, and they do form little tribal groups. You can see it on the playground. You can see it how they operate. And again, you know, it's, in fact, you know, racism and bigotry towards other cultures is really just a lazy way of doing that, you know. More developed societies. Oh, go ahead.
I think in generalized psychology, the kids start making that distinction of differences by the age of 4. And the distinctions might be that family has 2 TVs, we only have 1.
Right.
You know,
or
they have Pop-Tarts. They have Pop-Tarts for breakfast, we have to have oatmeal. You know, it's those subtle lifestyle differences that they start to witness and understand. But when it comes to race and culture, that comes later.
No, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about I'm talking about the foundational tendency of humans to band together and to in groups.
Yeah. Sure.
So I'm talking about, like, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about racism or looking at differences like that. I'm not even talking about kids that know what somebody's house is like or what they eat for breakfast. But kids form cliques. And when you're in the clique, you're in the group, you're good. When you're out of the clique, you're out of the group, you're bad. That happens all the time. That is inherent to humanity. That is one of our biggest things we have to overcome is, you know, we have this tendency to tribe. You know, we get into our groups. And, you know, when you're in the group, everything, you know, most things are forgiven. If you're out of the group, they're not. But
I get what you're saying.
You know, but it's just one of those things of, well, that's why I say it's a lazy way of doing it based on skin color, because there's plenty of, you know, society, like schools where racism isn't really a thing. And if you're in the popular clique, you can, you know, easily discriminate to those that are outside of the clique, you know, regardless of race. You have people of all races and genders and sexual orientations in the popular clique. And, you know, in the, again, it's that grouping mind frame. Just humans inevitably are doing it. And again, that's the thing that we have to rise above. But it's most destructive when it's really targeted in that kind of hateful way that we've seen, you know. We've seen a lot of kind of resurging lately, but, you know, it's always kind of been there in the human character. And we are, again, getting better, especially, and if you read records of any of the literate societies that were coming along and how they spoke so, like, they spoke about, you know, the Romans, they spoke about the Celts as if they were a different species and, like, a more animal than man and things like that. So, again, this goes back a long way. The Chinese did it with the steppe tribes, you know, all of the various tribes of which the Mongols are the most famous. But it's pervasive. It's just how human beings are, and we But we are slowly changing it. I say slowly from our perspective, but if you were to zoom out and look at us as a species on the scale of cosmic time, we're doing it rather rapidly. But it's going to take generations still. And it's painful and agonizing. And I say that as an observer, as somebody who's been privileged to not have to experience it. Simply as an observer, it's excruciating, let alone what somebody is going through. You talked about anger is not the right thing to do. You're absolutely right. And it's not fair, because I understand the anger. The anger is 100% understandable, and I get it. It's not fair. But it will not fix the problem. It will only make things worse. And when things get worse, it gets worse. It gets the most worse for the marginalized groups. That makes sense? So, you know, a lot of these protests, one of the things they keep stressing and pushing is, you know, it's the same thing they did in the 60s. It's the same thing they did in every successful civil rights push. You have people that train not to react to provocateurs, you know, and you see it all the time. There was...
You know what? You see everything, even in a restaurant, you know, that has the young, beautiful, thin girls with the black dresses and her cleavage showing. That's the only kind they hire. You know, they can be dumb as toads, but that's the only one they hire. And most often, they're predominantly, and I say here, almost 100% white. So somebody else of another culture comes in, and they don't fit that look. They're not going to get hired, even though they're way more than qualified, because there's already a built-in culture to that business. And these are the things we're trying to break down, as simple as that is. It's like,
right.
It's simple. And, you know, I know a lot of people think that, diversity and equity is taken too far. I would challenge who's doing the hiring. Because if they're already have a bias, then they're going to think diversity and equity, even by a small percentage, is not giving other people, well, these white people have a better qualification. Not necessarily, you know.
That's just overly simplistic.
And now even in job applications, they're all scanned by AI. And I happen to know for a fact, someone who put through their CV or whatever you call it, you know, their resume, with their cultural name and didn't get a response to many applications, changed their name on the application and got interviews. Now, the AI scans qualifications and keywords in that resume. As soon as it sees a name of a certain culture, it doesn't recognize, it spits it out. And so these are the kinds of things that we're trying to break that down. And of course, what is AI? That's another conversation we've had them before. AI is what we put into it, but who's putting into it? Because if it doesn't say be diverse, if you don't input be diverse in culture, it's not going to be.
Well, you're talking about the, you know, almost unconscious bias that kind of can...
Absolutely.
And, you know, I get where you're coming from. And, you know, I think everybody here knows that you're always going to be more willing to come up to the line of discussion than I do get what you're saying. And I understand that, you know, we kind of shifted into talking about policy. But
it's really diversity, appreciating diversity.
It is.
And not being afraid and understanding how we've been programmed and owning how we've been programmed. And I was. I mean, little Tommy Dunn, when I'm grade 3, was a Jehovah's Witness.
Right.
And he, along with his family, would get up in the suit and tie and go door to door. And that was their gig.
Right.
Came to our house. I know you do. My mother answered the door. I'm right there. And, of course, she very gracefully, you know, says, no, thank you. And my mother was kind of religious on the other side, right? So I look at Tommy and say, hey, Tommy, how you doing? I didn't care. Grade 3. I don't care. He's in a suit. I don't care. I don't quite get it. We just wanted to go out and, you know, in the swamp and catch tadpoles. And as soon as the door closed, my mother looked at me and said, You can be friends, but never marry one. Never date one. I don't want to see you ever in your life dating somebody. Now, many years later, that same woman, many years later, I'm in my 20s, married to a black man. My mother married an indigenous man, calls me up and says, we have more in common now. We should get together more often. I said, no. But that is not the reason to get together. Because she had this, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, suddenly you had this real, you know, revelation when you're an alcoholic and he's an alcoholic and whatever. But that's what I mean. It's, had I listened as a kid, because I was a bit of a rebel even at that age, it's just understanding how we've been programmed.
Yeah.
And knowing that we can deprogram. It's that simple thing where somebody says, well, that's the way I am. No, it's not. You choose how you are. And this, we're at a critical point, and I agree, Michael, that we have come a long way. I mean, we've got people traveling all over this planet in a matter of hours. And yes, you know, the whole world is this whole map of different colors. But we have to break down what holds us back, because there's a resurgence of especially white people being afraid that their thousands of years of righteousness is going to be threatened.
Oh, it hasn't been thousands of years in the sense that white people have not been dominant for that long. In fact, you don't have to go back that far.
No, Roman Empire.
All you have to go back is 500 years, and, you know, it was not the West that was the dominant one. It was the East. So again,
and Europe.
No, I'm talking about in the world. I'm saying that it was not, you know, it was not medieval Europe where the power and the intellectualism laid. It was Baghdad. It was not, you know, Rome. It was not London. It was not Paris. It was places in China. It was places in the Near East. It was places like that. So again, yeah, I get it. And, you know, I think that a lot of supremacists would love for people to think that it's been white culture that's dominated for thousands of years, but it hasn't. It's only been a relative, you know, recent jump, and that was, it's again getting into it. And I completely agree with what you're saying, and that's kind of why, you know, a lot of buzzwords are flying around here. A lot of buzzwords that, frankly, are triggering for a lot of people in the sense that it brings them back to the culture wars. And that that misses the – this is not about a culture war. This is about addressing an inherent issue in the human character that needs to be over time – it has to be stamped out. It has to be moved beyond if we're going to truly become a smarter species. And unfortunately, I personally think it's going to take generations more.
I do too. I do too.
As much as I don't like that. It is, and again, you know, we're not talking about, you know, standards or anything like that. We're just talking about the very fact that human beings have a tendency to have in-groups and out-groups. And this is the most current form of that, you know?
Well, it's a pack mentality. Sure.
Exactly. And that's, that is, and packs are defined in a huge variety of ways. And it is something that, again, I get the feelings behind it. I get the frustration. I get the anger. But this idea that within a human lifetime, a wand will be waved and something can be fixed. No, it's hard work. It is generation after generation after generation of hard work. And when I say that we have come a long way is that I don't think that it can be rationally – yes, you know, I alluded to this earlier when I said a lot of times it's two steps forward, one step back. Right now we're in the one step back period. But I don't think that a rational person can say that it is worse now than 100 years ago for any, you know, any minority culture in the West. It's just.
Oh, I tend to agree. I totally agree.
So, again, it's that arc. Yep. And it's not going to happen by itself. We have to be participants in it. But at the same time, take stock in where we were, take stock in where we are, focus on what got us here, what got us those achievements, you know?
It's, well, Wendy's adding, we're definitely in a one-step back period. I mean, and true enough, this is a touchy subject for people because everyone has their own, you know, last week we talked about perception. And it's how we see that. I used to tell my daughter, you're brown, and you are what the entire planet is going to look like one day. And that will be part of our evolution. And I believe that. And I don't think, who cares what color we are? You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's, you know, it's touchy for people because we all have our biases. We all have our conditioning. We all have our view of things. We each have our own life experience that,
yeah.
You know, we've all interacted with the world in certain ways that says, oh, I've had this one experience, therefore. You know?
Well, it's anecdotal. Everybody feels like their anecdotal experience is the true reality of life. By the way, I know we're just going on soapboxes after soapboxes. We're already 36 minutes in. I know we got to pull some cards too. But again, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this. It's just that,
I know.
It's that
diversity,
thing of, you know, yes, yes, diversity is important. Yes. And no, and God, there's, I don't, I'm trying to walk a tightrope here because at the same time,
no,
I want to address things, but I don't want to,
I know.
I don't want to just,
I hear all right, you.
I'm going to stay away from anything that's policy. I'm just going to talk about the philosophical arguments and people can derive what they will from it. And, you know, it's just one of those things. We're all in this together. We're all going to figure it out. And, you know, I acknowledge in the chat. I think I'm being, when I say hundreds of years or maybe a few generations or something, I honestly think it's going to take thousands of years. Because, you know, look at where we were 1,000 years ago. Look at where we are today. It's easier to see the changes. Look at where we were 10,000 years ago. Look at where we are today. It's easier to see the changes. But again, we are also evolving more rapidly. The change is coming more rapidly. So it's hard. It's impossible to predict, which also makes life exciting. It does. It does.
Well, as Dr. Kelly sums it up in the newsletter, humans are all made of star material and therefore equal regardless of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny.
And that's
all of us. We're in this together. You know?
And frankly, whether we like to be or not, you know, and that's the thing. And that, I'm just going to get on this last soapbox and then we'll take a few cards. I don't know. We're going to have that many anyway. And then we'll sign off. But my last soapbox is tolerance doesn't mean you have to like something. You know,
that's right.
We're not going to go into mass genocide. These people aren't just going to be going away. People we disagree with, no matter where they are, they're not going away. We have to learn to coexist and to tolerate one another. Also, you know, we can't skip over the intolerance paradox. People can be free to think whatever they want as long as it doesn't affect or hurt the life of somebody else, you know. And when your desire starts infringing on my rights, you know, natural rights, that's where ideas have to, you know, kind of stop. But you're always going to have folks with bad ideas out there. Even when we can get to thousands of years in the future, maybe when, you know, the percentages are different, right? Because it's all a game of percentages. A percentage of what is the statistical mass of people that think this way or that way, right? That's going to be what moves it this way and that way. There will always be things on the, you know, margins of percentages of thought. You know, if you do a poll of 1,000 people, you always see that bell curve, right? You see the average, you see the extremes. Those are always going to be there. It's just if we can move the needle, if we can get more folks just understanding that we're going to coexist in this world, you know, and it's all, and we're going to coexist with folks that we think have horrible ideas. And up until the moment where they start using violence is when you got to realize that, okay, I respect your right to think what you want, but that right ends when it starts affecting my safety and health, right?
I agree.
So that's all I'm going to say about that. I want to give the floor to you, and then we can start pulling some cards.
Well, let's start pulling some cards. I mean, I'm down with that. We've got a few names. We've got some people in the chat. If you want to throw your names in there, Michael will draw an inner oracle self-discovery card, and I'll draw a tarot card and see what we get.
Absolutely.
I know we addressed one of the touchier topics we have done, I think, in a long time. If ever, because really touches the nerves of, certainly in the way that we approached it tonight, Michael. So, you know, it's be your own thinker, be your own judge, you know, self-assess, and hopefully we're evolving.
Well, okay. But it's never going to be easy. It's never going to be smooth.
No. We have Dawn first. Hi, Dawn. How you doing? That's D-A-W-N for those listening in the archives.
Absolutely. So let me go ahead and just get the old guidebook out here. I was woefully unprepared and couldn't find it at first. All right. Give me 1 second, Dawn. I have for you number 33, which is preference over principle. A mark of knowledge and wisdom is knowing when and how to offer an opinion or voice a complaint. If it is a matter of preference, yield. If it is a matter of principle, policy, or law, stand firm. It's important to know when and where to pick your battles. Be selective regarding the areas in which you invest your energy.
Well, this is the Six of Cups. So that, Six of Cups preference. But I think this has to do with family, and probably an extended family, community, preference over principle. And maybe in some ways tonight's conversation is relevant, in that what's your preference versus what are you standing by in principle? And, you know, conversations or relationships or friendships, for that matter. So what are your principles? And maybe it is you're being challenged in some way. It comes to mind that I knew somebody for years before I realized that she had a cruel streak toward animals. I didn't know that. And that's a principle of mine. And I did end the friendship because that's crossing a line. And it wasn't by her being disciplinary or anything. It was just a, never mind. And so it doesn't have to be about, you know, politics and diversity and social stuff. It can be something else, Dawn, that is something you stand by in what you believe. I hope that makes sense to you. We have Jeff. Jeff and Shauna did a video today about transplanting orchids because Shauna is an orchid freak. Yeah, I should all take a look at it. It's fun. All right, the blind outdoorsman, by the way.
Good shout out. Dr. Jeff always deserves a shout out. He does good work out there and has great pages. And for you today, I have number 42, trust and integrity. Integrity means being true to oneself, intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Oh, well, two of them came out together, Jeff. Judgment and the Ten of Hearts. I think judgment is about declaration, making announcements, stating who you are. The Ten of Cups or Hearts is, you know, has to do with family, community. And I really think this has more to do with the work that you're doing and how your integrity is having you come out of your shell in that honesty, in that, you know, presentation and really revealing yourself in that vulnerability. And the rewards are coming. It's just hang in there. So it's you know what you're doing. I think you're on a roll. You and Shauna, really. And I'm not just blowing air here. I mean that sincerely. Judgment is self, like that declaration, announcement. And so you're speaking more from your heart. And I think that's awesome. So that's really more of an affirmation here. So I like it. Okay, we have Kay Mallon. I'm not sure who that is, but apparently we have selected for them before. What do you got, Michael?
I am no longer in mute. I don't know if I recall it, but happy to always pull a card. And tonight you get one of the good ones. Wild card number 9, blank. Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It's what you need it to be. It's all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices and the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
Well, hey, Malin. I love the blank card. Anything's possible. But the first card I pulled out here was the devil, which is conflict, confusion. It's not evil, trust me. It's just a symbol. So I said, well, what's that about? And then I pulled the justice card. So I think what this is asking of you is look for fairness and equitability without getting riled up. Or getting conflicted or confused in yourself where, you know, starts getting too much emotion. Stand up for what you believe in, absolutely. But it's going to be written as you choose it to be. So, you know, I often say, you know, my 4 points is sense, feel, think, and do. Use your intuition as well as your feelings. Think about it before you take an action. So, and just keep in mind that fairness and equitability. So maybe this is a situation that hasn't happened yet or something that is unfolding. So, you know, I'm going out on a limb there, Michael, but I've been there before. So.
Yeah, you got to go with it when you're feeling it. I do. I know.
We have Audra.
I got Audra, and I got number 13 for you, positive consciousness. It is our soul's natural inclination to be positive. Therefore, positive consciousness transcends positive thinking. As human beings, we can find ourselves with the need to filter negativities and ill will. Be at peace with your natural self and continue displaying goodwill towards others. Don't hate or hold hatred in your heart. Maintain your positive attitude even in the face of obstacles and discouragements, for they are temporary.
Well, I see some really good allegiances and alliances here. The 4 of clubs, the 4 of wands is what I call the only marriage card in the deck, but it doesn't have to be marriage in a, you know, whatever way. It can be an agreement, contract, just an arrangement, if you will. And so a promissory and where somebody's on side. And positive consciousness is, you know, moving forward, but with those good alliances. And I am tending to want to say plural, not singular. So I think that you're lining yourself up in a really good way, Audra. Just because life teaches us to be realists, it's not about throwing 100% in, but 99% in, and always still being an observer, you know? And in being an observer, we can learn to coexist with our differences. So you have to be able to recognize the differences to know what it is you're, you know, kind of interacting with. So, yeah, it's cool. Wendy said you haven't had that card before, but it's still staying in the life leadership paragon suit. So, oh, that's interesting.
That's an interesting trend, too, seeing the, yeah, the suits.
It is. Okay, we do have our card keeper, Wendy.
Wendy, I pulled another wild card tonight. You get wild card number 6, entropy. Within the cycle of life, there are useful energies, or low entropy, that can wane to uselessness, or high entropy. Their energy stands still, and their entropy increases. They no longer give value to the evolution of life. This can include an attitude or behavior that requires adjustment to once again take a new step at renewal and rebirth, thus lowering one's entropy. When one seeks to be part of the when one seeks to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, that one lowers their personal entropy, and the world is at a better place.
I got the Emperor, which I find interesting, Wendy. Emperor is always about some type of authority. But in this case, I'm inclined to say it could be your own authority or, perhaps coming to terms with your own confidence or, not holding back so much of what you think or believe that you know well or know well enough. Now, having said that, it can also be you in alliance with somebody else who is a male energy who considers to be authority, and your entropy, you're getting more in balance, basically. So whether that's, I think it's likely both. It's external and internal, because I want to bring them both up. So, you know, being more at peace with yourself and being your own boss, which I know you are, but being more comfortable with it. So, all right, is that it for our cards?
I believe it is. I believe it is.
Thanks for the feedback, everyone. And Jeff, too, he said he ended up posting on his personal profile instead tonight, and really not just on his, you know, blind outdoorsman. So he's stepping out of the comfort zone. Good. All right. I like it.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it's been quite a discussion tonight, everybody. Thanks. I know Michael and I have... Well, we're the center of the universe here, aren't we, Michael?
Yeah, so. I mean, I'm always the center of the universe in my mind. I don't know. You know, the fun thing about relativism and the known universe is, you know, back in the old days, humanity used to think that Earth was the center of the universe, right? And then we realized we weren't. And then we realized there is no center of the universe, so from our perspective, we are. Because there is no center. It's all infinite. It expands, and you know, there was no beginning. It's incredible when how you look at it. I know we're kind of wrapping up. It's getting to be that time of the evening, but I'm gonna finish my own part by just touching on something I told you I would. I'm gonna nerd out. I'm gonna bring Star Trek into it, and you know, the truth is, you know, we're not the same. We're not all, you know, the same, and that's the point. The Star Trek principle is infinite diversity in infinite combinations. And it is it's going to be humanity's, and this is a bastardization of the Roddenberry book because I can't remember it and I'm not going to Google it right now, that humanity will have truly evolved when we learn to not simply tolerate our differences, but appreciate them and value them. And again, it's complicated, but I'm going to tell you right there, you know, that is what I'm here for. Infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Infinity is a heck of a thing. So I'm going to turn it over to you for your last words tonight, Dr. Vicky.
Well, Wendy's saying we should do something fun next time.
Yeah, there's an ellipsis on the back of that, too.
Let's talk about dreams, the paranormal.
Yeah, this one's heavy.
It's what?
I said, yeah, I get it. This one's heavy.
You know, it is, but, you know, and on the back of Dr. Kelly's, you know, newsletter, it wasn't important in it, just the climate.
I know.
And, important, you know, stuff that we have to, along with the fun stuff. So I think next week, let's talk a little more about paranormal. Let's talk a little more about mid-worlds and potential ghosts and spirits, shall we?
Let's talk about the fact that if there are ghosts, they have not been paying rent or financially contributing to households, and it is BS. Anyway, that sounds good to me.
Let's talk about mediumship. How about we just nail it down to that? We're going to talk about mediums and mediumship.
Yeah, I'm game. Sounds like a plan.
We haven't come at it from that way before, so a new way.
I kind of feel like we've done most combinations in the last, you know, what is it, like 12, 15? It's been at least 25 years that we've been doing this. I mean, so for the last 100 years that we've been talking, I feel like, yeah, we've covered a lot of stuff. It's always going to be important to touch on it.
You know, I went for my blood pressure meds at the pharmacy the other day. I said, yeah, the stuff that keeps me alive. He said, you're going to live for a long time yet. And I looked at him and said, I hope not. And the blue look on his face. And he's known me from before. I tend to be a little flippant at times, and he chuckled.
Yeah.
At first he was serious, and then he chuckled. So, no, I don't want to live a long time. So, anyway.
Well,
just caught me at the 25 years. I thought, oh, we are not going to be at this in 25 years from now. We are not. No.
Well, I'm telling you.
That's funny. Well, I want to say, everybody, you know, as usual, you know, closing out the program, don't let them push you around out there. Don't let them knock you off your, you know, who you are. Stay true to who you are.
Yeah.
And always find a little kindness in your day.
Absolutely. And you got to find the humor in it, too. You know, you can laugh at the absurdity or you can cry about it. And also, I appreciate everybody's grace, too, because we can't hear it on our end, but I can see a little graph. And one thing that longtime listeners will know is I never know when we're about to wrap up, so the music keeps getting reset and stops and then keeps getting replayed. So I appreciate your putting up with us. We got a top tier operation here. I'm a great producer, just ask me.
You are.
But anyway, I'll say, yep, don't let them push you around out there. Appreciate each other, tolerate each other, realize we're all in this together. Even the people you don't want to be in with, we are. We're on this floating spaceship going through the galaxy. And it's a heck of a thing. So can't wait to our discussion next week. Can't wait to see y'all next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.